We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim. Welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. So we're going to have a little bit of indoor and outdoor this week as far as the sports are concerned. We're going to talk to Scott Franson, who is the second-year crew coach for the Bears. They get their season, well, their spring season underway shortly. And, of course, they have a fall season as well, and it's Olympic year. So a lot to talk about with Scott, who is a three-time Olympian. And it'll be an interesting conversation because crew is one of the great sports here at Cal. A tremendous tradition when you look over the years. The Cal teams were actually the Olympic team at one point in time back in the 20s. And then you've got this great rivalry going on with Washington as well each and every year. So it'll be interesting to get Scott's thoughts about a lot of different things. But we start first and foremost with basketball, men's basketball, the Bears' final home weekend of the season. They'll host the Colorado Buffaloes Thursday. We'll be on the air at 5:30 with the pregame show, tip at 6. And then senior day on Saturday, the Bears against Utah, 2:30, pregame show, 3 o'clock, tap against the Utes. All right, here is head coach Mark Fox. This past weekend, the Bears got the split up in the state of Washington. There's a real logjam in the Pac-12 this year at two different spots. At the very top, and then you're battling like four teams for positioning below that core. So there's a lot of different reasons for different teams to win games at this stretch of the season. For you guys, it's positioning in a Pac-12 tournament. We could have a precursor of your first round match with like Utah this week because they're kind of in that pack as well. At this stage of the season, what is your message to your team as to the importance of the games, or is it just the next game and we want to win the next game?
Well, let me answer it this way, in reference to your open. There's a great book called The Boys in the Boat, which mm-hmm. is written about really the crew rivalry between Cal and Washington. And at one point in the boat, there's a theory that's pointed out that you have to care whether your teammate wins or loses as much as you care about whether yourself has success. And I think that's really parallel to what we talk a lot about with our team right now, is that as we rebuild, you know, this program that caring for your teammates' success is really important. But anytime we put the uniforms on, it's about trying to win that game, and it's no more complicated than that. We have to focus on the things that we can control, and if we do that, then it'll position us the best way possible for the things that come down the road, like the Pac-12 tournament. But you know, for our group, it's about just trying to do everything possible to win the next game, and really to have a better season than what the program had a year ago, to show some progress. And now that they've done that, you know, it's about tallying up, you know, a few more wins and trying to build momentum. And the only way to do that is to improve each day and do your best to win the next game.
So the next game is against Colorado. In that game, the first time around at Boulder, I think it's the only game this year where the Bears shot 50% or better in both halves. Right in it, they got an experienced team. McKinley right down the stretch kind of made the difference. Utah, I remember talking to you after the game, you just felt the effort wasn't there in that game against the Utes. You had to travel on Friday, and it just one of those nights where the team just didn't have the energy. As you look at both of these teams and having played them just a couple of weeks ago, what do you see this weekend?
Well, Colorado's playing for the league championship, a nationally ranked team, very complete, experienced, terrific point guard, outstanding team offensively across the board. And so it'll be a great test for us. We played very well in Boulder. I thought the altitude wore us out a little bit late, and we made a couple defensive errors and looking back, probably we're tied more to fatigue than anything, but it'll be a game in which we're going to have to control tempo and play extremely well, because although we scored it very well in Boulder, we can't count on being that efficient again. We have to make sure that we did, much like we did in that first game, we control the tempo, because if we start playing a little too quick, we don't play as well. And then Utah, obviously, I thought the effort was there in Salt Lake City. We just didn't have the energy to give the effort that was needed. You know, I think the kids tried. We were a very tired team that day, and I thought Utah was much more physical and aggressive than we were. So, you know, we'll have to hopefully, come out against the game, you know, Utah on senior day with some emotion and be able to control that and hopefully play a much more physical brand of basketball.
You mentioned senior day. You got Paris Austin, young man from Bishop O'Dowd, started at Boise State, transferred, sat out a year, 2 years with the Bears. And then Kareem South, a grad transfer. Just talk about what those two guys have done this year and what they've meant to your team.
Well, we look at it as we have four seniors, those two that are playing a lot, and then, you know, Jacob Arender, who's not playing as much, and then David Surge, who's another guy who's a walk-on sitting down there on the bench during the games, but is obviously a very valuable member of our team, you know, each week during practice. But, you know, specifically to Kareem and Paris, I've said this to Paris, you know, he's had a college career where he's had several different coaches. And that can be tough on a guy, because you never really get comfortable and confident in a system. And I think really in the last month, you've seen him really become confident and comfortable in how we're trying to play. And he's really played terrific in the last few weeks. And a lot of that credit goes to his approach. I think that, Paris will be one that when he leaves here, I don't know if people will quite understand the value, because I think the guys that have stuck in there this year and really changed the momentum of our program should be celebrated. And Paris is at the forefront of that group.
You mentioned David Surge just real quickly. I mean, the game against the Huskies, that was one of the few games where you see each team had a former manager on the court playing in the final couple of minutes. That's actually kind of, I mean, David, we've known for a while because he's played a big role on and off the court for you guys. Jacob, I mean, a terrific student, a wonderful, you know, family that's had tremendous success. You just know that both of those guys are going to have success away from the basketball. And that's kind of really what is the most important thing at the end of the day. But with Kareem and Paris, you got two transfers. And this brings me to my topic of the week. There's a recent proposal that may go up for vote amongst the coaches, I guess maybe as early as April, where players that transfer, the first time that they transfer, they will not lose any time. In other words, in years past, if you transfer, you usually had to sit out a year, then you could play. Now the proposal is if somebody wants to transfer, they can immediately become eligible. Currently, men's and women's basketball, football, men's hockey, and baseball, I believe, are the only sports where you actually have to sit out a year unless you get some kind of a waiver. And that's a topic for another time because it's a whole different can of worms. Worms being maybe the optimum word in that whole kind of thing. Talk about what your thoughts are about the transfer. And do you think players should be, for one time only, it's the first transfer, not subsequent ones, that they should be immediately eligible to play?
Well, I think that the momentum behind this proposal is so great that it's going to pass. I think that the right parameters have to be in place because we have something else that's called the APR, which is an annual calculation of whether or not you're graduating your student athletes and you have a retention rate that protects the students, so you're not just running guys in and out every year because they can't play. But if you start to open up the transfer market where they do not have to sit out, and you're going to see more transfers. And then those transfers count against your APR, which can ultimately make you ineligible for the NCAA tournament. So the two things are going to have to be tied together, whether it's the required GPA in order to get the immediate eligibility, which there's a 2.6 grade point average required in order to protect your APR point. I think the two will have to be somehow connected. Otherwise, you'll have some unintended consequences of the rule. But I think, you know, free trade, if a kid's unhappy and wants to go, we didn't block anyone's transfer a year ago. You know, I think it's obviously something that we should have a one-time limit because otherwise, you know, I think we'll lose the value of a kid having a career at a place. And that's so important, as you mentioned before, really at the end of the day, you know, a young man that plays at Cal and graduates from Cal and develops the relationships at such an unbelievable place, you know, should have a greater life because of his experience on our campus. And if you start bouncing around to three campuses in 4 years, it's hard to really, you know, springboard yourself for the rest of your life with a great alumni base like we have.
Cal has had some players transfer, not a lot as regular transfers. We had a couple of grad transfers. Dwight Tarwater transferred in from Cornell, a great undergraduate degree. Grant Mullins transferred in from Columbia, tremendous graduate, undergraduate degree. Does it make it more difficult at a place like Cal for a regular transfer to come in? Because you're talking about you got to have the right courses. And I mean, it's tough enough to get in here as a freshman, let alone as a transfer?
Well, I'm not sure I'm experienced enough at Cal to know all the answers to that, but I would assume that it will be a little bit advantageous for teams that are at schools without maybe the academic rigor of a Cal Berkeley. I think that at Berkeley we value the education, and I think that graduate transfers that qualify, I think, could be a tremendous addition. We have some deadlines for graduate admission that make it a little bit difficult and challenging. We have some, you know, I just think some unique things that make that market a little harder for us than it is for other people. But ultimately, I think the way that we can win is to recruit guys that are 3 and 4 year players that really establish a foundation for themselves and for our program while they're here. And then we ultimately get to the point where we're playing with an older team and an experienced team, which, you know, as we all know, this year we're not. But I think across college basketball, the teams with experience have, and teams that are battle-tested together have a tremendous advantage. And those are two advantages, quite frankly, we don't have this year. And hopefully, as we do age, that we'll get to that point.
Used to be, in years gone by, you go to high school games, you watch high school players play in their high school games, you talk to the high school coach, and that's kind of your recruiting. Well, that has completely changed now, because how much of it, in your case, you have signed two high school players. But how important is the high school coach in the grand scheme of things on the national level versus the handler or the AAU coach? I mean, how has that changed the dynamic of recruiting over the course of the last couple of decades?
I think in our sport in particular, I think it's different than everybody else. to be honest with you. I think that the development system of high school players in the United States is not off the rails, but it's on a totally different track than what football is dealing with, or women's basketball or baseball. It's a completely different animal. And so, yes, you do recruit sometimes from someone that's not the high school coach, someone that's either the summer coach or as you say, a handler slash advisor. But ultimately, the young people that value education and their family values the experience and the springboard that Cal provides, those are the ones that are going to be successful for us. And finding those is hard, obviously, because you know the situations are all so unique. But it's a completely different lane that we're running in than most of the sports, if not all the other sports, are running in because of how we have allowed the system to evolve. And then we try to adjust the rules after the fact. And so it's really it's quite chaotic if you want to be honest about it. And we've gotten away, not totally away, but we've gotten away from recruiting from the high school coach off the high school team. And I'm not sure that we'll see a return to that anytime in the near future.
Transfer portal, we almost have to check it kind of daily, but help me out there, because you mentioned you had three guys that left Cal last year and went to other schools. How does that work when you come in as a new coach? If, for example, those players, because the season ends and maybe it's 2 or 3 weeks until a new head coach is hired. How does that work? What can you do 3 weeks after the season is over and you get hired, let's say, and somebody's already put their name in the transfer portal? How does that affect how you might try to retain them, or do you have to re-recruit them? How does that go?
Well, obviously, when you come in as a new coach, and every situation is different. But I think with as much as these kids had struggled, that we just supported these guys trying to find the right path for them, and I believe that the right kids stayed here to rebuild our program, and we have very honest conversations with all those kids. And the difficulty of rebuilding isn't for everybody. And that's why I have great respect for the kids that have stayed and taken this challenge head on. And quite frankly, I'm really pleased with some of the progress that this particular team has made in that area.
One final thing on the transfer portal. The thing that I've always been concerned about is that you've got one and dones who just want to be here for 1 year and then they're out. Then you've got guys that do get their degree and then they want to continue playing basketball, but they only have 1 year of eligibility. And in a lot of places, I mean, you got to go 2 years to the grad program, right? So is there a way to monitor the kids? I see this maybe more in football than maybe basketball, I think, where a guy comes in and he's there for the fall term and then it's see you later. I'm going to go either to the NFL or whatever. Do they keep track of those kids? How many of those kids actually graduate and complete that 2-year degree? And does that then get used against the school if they don't?
I think one of the reasons that graduate transfers took off is initially, I don't think they were calculated in your APR. We have one in Cream South who's really done a nice job for us in many areas this year. He's in a 2-year academic program, but he's committed to doing, both years and earning his master's degree. It's something that he wants and it's important to him. And it was important to us to find someone that was committed to fulfilling his academic obligations. And I think every situation is different. There are schools that have 1-year master's programs that again, in this world of graduate transfers have a little bit of an advantage. There's places that don't require a GRE score for admission into graduate school. So some of those places, to get a 1-year player maybe have some advantages, but over the long haul, ultimately, I think that at Cal we'll win with young people that we recruit and then that develop and stay for certainly more than 1 year.
Yeah, and I think that's Justin's attitude about the thing as well, is you want kids that want to be here at Cal. They want the degree from Cal. They get the opportunity to play in a Power 5 conference. So you've got to recruit those kids. And if you don't recruit those kids, then you got the Pandora box that you got to deal with the rest of the kids. We appreciate your time, Mark, as always. And I look forward to the games this week against Colorado and Utah. And good luck.
Thank you very much. Go Bears.
A reminder, Cal fans, if you're interested in tickets to any event to Cal Athletics here in the late winter term and the spring as well, you can just go to calbears.com or 1-800-GO-BEARS. Either way, you can find a way to get to an event, ticket prices, and the website has got just great information vis-a-vis features, results, game stories, etc. So a great place for all of your Cal information, including any information on men's crew, which gets started this week. And we're with the second-year head coach, first-time podcast participant, Scott Franson. Scott, a pleasure being with you. A pleasure to have you on the show. We appreciate you taking the time. But your men's crew team kind of splits up this week, two different places you go. Tell us about getting started with the spring races. You had a fall schedule, but tell us about the spring.
Yeah, getting into the very early season of the spring races. In the past, our racing season has started at the San Diego Crew Classic beginning of April. But last year and now this year, starting with these two early season races, with the top two boats going to Las Vegas to race against Dartmouth and Oregon State. And then the third and the fourth boat going to Newport to race in the California Challenge Cup against a bunch of the other UC programs and Santa Clara and some other smaller UC programs.
Your crew is interesting because it's almost like several little teams within a bigger team. You have multiple boats for people that don't know. The Varsity Eights is the one that, I mean, everybody kind of considers maybe the number one event in crew. But you've got multiple boats and different groups of people in those. How do you sort that all out?
Yeah, I mean, the larger team is incredibly important. Everyone's pushing each boat or each guy ahead of them upwards in the priority of the team. Varsity is definitely the priority, but, you know, with everybody healthy, we have 5.5/8 of guys mm-hmm. on the team. And that team dynamic and that idea that everybody's in it together and we win as a team is extremely important to me and to the guys on the team. And so the goal is to go into every set of races, you know, whether it's one boat or five boats racing and have everybody win.
And then you've got eights, you got fours and twos when you think about the international competition as well. I was thinking about this on my drive down today. I mean, how do you determine in like your 8-man boats, who's got the number 2 seat and who's got the number 7 seat versus the number 4 versus the number 5? I mean, if they were all clones, maybe that would work, but that's not the case. How do you determine that?
I mean, some of it is just trying different combinations and trying different lineups and seeing if it clicks. You know, there are certain stereotypes that go with who should be in the middle of the boat, who should be in the stern pair, setting the rhythm, and who should be in the bow pair, sort of leading the charge on balancing the boat. But those stereotypes don't always ring true. Sometimes you can put a small guy into the 5 or 6 seat and have it just have it click and have him be the connector between, you know, the stern pair and the bow four. A lot of it is, I mean, trial and error makes it sound a little too random. Yeah. But, you know, it is, that's what we do through the year of training is try different combinations and switch guys across and do a piece and switch guys across. And so you get a feel for what guys work, you know, in front of or behind other guys.
Well, you had terrific weather with which to work here the last couple of weeks. How has that helped you in the process of determining that?
Yeah, it's been really nice out on the water, on the estuary or Briones in the morning. The last 2 or 3 weeks has been, you know, just perfectly glass flat water and beautiful sunrises coming up. It makes training, you know, it's definitely a pull to California, right? And that's good for recruits to see that. It makes training pleasant, even though the guys are still doing a lot of very, very hard work. You know, but to some extent, we also need to go out and search out rough water, because there will be some races through the year where there are going to be waves or white caps or adverse conditions. And if we train in perfectly flat water all the time, then maybe we're not ready for that. So whenever it is rainy or windy, we make sure we take advantage of that. And we see that actually as a positive to make us more ready for those races.
We mentioned you're the second-year head coach, but this is not your first stint at Cal because you obviously rode back here. You were on some terrific teams back in the early 2000s, national championship type of teams. So you, in fact, Mark Fox, who we had on the previous segment, had a couple of years at Washington as a graduate assistant up there. So the rivalry between Washington and Cal is kind of like Michigan and Ohio State in football, or however you want to describe the great rivalries. Tell us about, you know, we talk about the history of Cal crew and rowing, you know, being an Olympic, actually a team years ago. It was the Cal team represented the United States. Well, when did you grasp the full kind of feel for the history and the vibe of a Cal crew?
Yeah, I don't think I grasped the depth of the history while I was here as a student athlete and graduated in 2002. But as I came back to coach, so this is now my eighth year of coaching here, sixth as the assistant and second as head coach. And through those middle years as being the assistant, I started to work on the log of Cal crew, the volume two. The first one was written by Jim Lemon, published in 1987, and that covered the first 100 years or so of the team. And so I've actually done a lot of research and written the history of the last 30 years. So I'd like to think I know now the depth of the program and the history. And as you said, you know, the Cal 8 going on to win 3 Olympic gold medals. No other university has done that. And ever since 1964, that dynamic has kind of changed, and guys are going to the Olympics for their home country somewhat individually. And so now we have 28 individual Olympians from the team. So that's a pretty solid number. And very few teams, you know, at Cal or rowing teams around the country, I don't think anybody has those kinds of numbers. So definitely proud of the history and wanting to continue to add to it.
I'm sure you are. Cal, a little bit like rugby in crew, and the great tradition, kind of the backbones of this athletic program from the very first. So those are the programs that have been around the longest and have had just phenomenal success. You mentioned the Olympics. So you're from Canada, east of Vancouver, we were talking about earlier, a little bit in the wine country up there, so I'm jealous. I'll have to get up there at some point in time. But you represented Canada 3 times in the Olympic Games as well, medaled as well. What was it like for you to represent your country at the Olympic Games?
Yeah, I mean, it's a special opportunity or a special experience. And you know, it's easy for me to say this now being the coach at Cal, but for me, that journey to the Olympics, for the Canadian team really started at Cal for me. You know, I came in as a good, but not exceptional high school rower. And because of the training environment that we had and the group of guys that we had, that pushed me on to, you know, being able to think about going onto the Canadian team or going to the Olympics. So, and that's the training environment that we're trying to instill and that we have right now, where you get some of the best guys from all over the world. You know, lots of Americans, but also guys from all over the world, and that competitive environment and having them push each other to get better is really what's the driving force of why, you know, we've enjoyed some success and hope to help to continue that success. But yeah, racing at the Olympics, that's kind of the ultimate in our sport. And lining up for three Olympic finals, all with a good chance at a medal and being able to convert on one of them. That's, you know, definitely some very, very special memories.
Yeah, you and Dave Calder, he was your buddy. You got the silver 1 year. And I mean, it's interesting when you have just the two guys. Mm-hmm. There has to be, I would think, it's got to be on and off the water as well. I mean, you got to really know somebody, don't you? I mean, if you got 8 guys, okay, you got to know 7 other, but one other guy in the boat, I mean, you've really got to be part and parcel with each other.
Yeah, for better and for worse. In innate, there are, you know, at elite level sport, there's some very strong personalities, but in innate, you know, there's some, you can hide from certain confrontations, or conversations, in a pair. It is a marriage. And, you know, Dave and I have been through, through some trials, but I love them. and I think as we got ready for Beijing, which is where we won the silver medal, you know, things came together fairly quickly or at short notice towards the end, and we only really had 4 months or so together in the pair. So there's not much time for frustrations to boil up and boil over. But then as we got ready for London, you know, having two and a half years together, there's a lot more time for things to rise to the surface. But you learn how to deal and how to get the best out of each other. And, you know, I think Dave and I really did that.
Well, if a lot of people don't know, they probably should know that if you're an Olympian and you're not in one of the marquee sports like basketball, you got NBA players or some of the other sports where they can make some really good money, endorsement money, get, you know, sponsorships or help from their national committee. I would imagine crew does not fit in that category. And you had to do some, you had to work. You literally have to have a job. You're in the financial business. What did you do there?
Yeah, well, after Beijing, I retired. I did actually think I was done for a little bit and started working at a bank up in Canada called the Royal Bank of Canada. And that was, you know, that was a bit of a foray into, okay, what am I going to do after rowing? And using my business degree from Cal, and you know, I think the obvious step was going to be into banking or finance, and that's kind of what I thought I was going to do. And RBC was awesome. They were so supportive of what I was trying to do, and then when I decided to go back to rowing, they were really supportive of that as well. But yeah, the financial windfall is just not there in rowing, and you know, whereas I would, you know, some part of me wishes that it had been, or, you know, I'd be able to make a good amount of money with it. You know, I think it also adds to the purity of the sport and it very, very much defines why people do it. You know, it's for the love of the sport. It's for love of competition, wanting to compete at the highest level in our sport, which is the Olympics. And, you know, I think for other sports where the Olympics isn't the pinnacle of that sport, say an NBA or basketball, you know, I don't think the Olympics has quite as much meaning. That's my personal opinion. So for rowing, you know, there's no question about it. You know, there's no $1 million contract waiting for you. So it's just train as hard as you can and try to make it onto that podium.
All right. So then you decided to get into coaching.
Yeah.
Tell us about that decision.
Yeah. I mean, after London, I the path into finance was still very much open, and that was the plan. And then about 3 months before London, Mike Tatey called me and asked about me becoming his assistant at Cal. And I struggled with it at first, for sure, not knowing if, you know, getting into banking or getting into coaching was the path I wanted to choose. And in the end, I decided to come down here and try it out and see if I liked it. And I immediately loved it. And I'm thankful every day that I chose this path. It's a pretty great opportunity to be able to, you know, now 8 years later, seven, 8 years later, be able to lead the program that was so influential for me as a rower, but also just kind of as a student athlete and as a young man. So to have that opportunity to live the life of, you know, of passion, rather than slogging along in a job, I don't underestimate how great that is. And yeah, it's, you know, there are certain, aspects of it that pull you right back into the nerves and everything of racing yourself, which is a lot of fun. And then there's the stresses and making sure the program is on the right path and recruiting and academics and all that are going well. So.
Well, this is not a 9-to-5 job. We know that. Okay. It's just not that, but the rewards are tremendous. And Mike now working with the national team again at the boathouse, the T. Gary Rogers boathouse. Gary's a tremendous supporter of Cal Athletics, particularly the crew team. And you guys have a fabulous facility down there on the water. Tell us a little bit more, because at some point in time, oh, it's going to be April 25th, you're going to host Washington. I mean, you're going to see him a lot this year, hopefully. You'll see him there. You'll see him at the Pac-12 championships in Gold River, California. And then you'll see him at the IRA championships over in Mercer, New Jersey. Tell us about that rivalry.
Yeah, I really do think it's a rivalry. And I think most rivalries are this way. You know, there's a certain amount of edge to it, but it's also something that makes both programs better. You know, knowing that they're going to be good this year. They've got a great program, and they train hard just like we do. And it, I think it keeps us on our toes, and likewise, I'm sure it does for them as well. So, you know, while you're in it as a student athlete, you see, you know, you just see the rival, and you want to beat them. And that is absolutely the mindset. I also have the perspective of having been on the Canadian team or, you know, knowing guys from the other side of the fence, you know, from Washington, over the years. And while we joke around a lot about, you know, go Huskies or go Bears, you know, they're good guys. And so you can step away from the rivalry a little bit without taking the edge off it at all. but you know, the Rob Gibsons, the Will Crothers, the Dave Calder, you know, unfortunately he's a Husky. All those guys, Conlon McCabe, they're good friends of mine and great guys.
All right. What do you do to keep in shape now? I mean, a crew is one thing. You can get on a machine and do that. But you've also been involved. You've run Ironman competitions. So what do you do now to keep in shape?
Yeah, there was a stretch while I was starting to coach that I kind of traded off rowing to get into Ironman. And I needed something to train for. You know, I was always someone that absolutely needed to train hard to kind of get it out of my system every day. And Ironman was that for me for a long time, for about 4 or 5 years. And really, really loved having something else to focus my passion on, my athletic passion on. And then that sort of faded slowly into not really needing to train all the time. And that kind of coincided with really focusing on the job more and more. And then starting a family. I have a 3-year-old son and almost a 1-year-old daughter now. And so the need to train, like to force training in every day, just kind of dissipated a little bit. So there was about 2 years where I really didn't do anything, to be honest. And recently have been getting back into running and getting back on the erg. And it's more exercise now than training. Yeah. Which has been getting my mind wrapped around being okay with that is weird. But you know, been getting on the erg with my assistant coaches, Sam and Brandon, every once in a while. And the splits are now not embarrassing. So it's okay.
I mean, it's a competition. I mean, you look like and have been a competitive guy.
I'm always competing, even if the other guy doesn't know it. So yeah, it's a competition, but Sam and Brandon are always good to let me win.
Well, of course, you're the head coach. You got to win, right? All right. Real quickly, tell us about this year's team. What do you see as you know, the possibilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think the possibilities are endless, or the optimism for this season is definitely positive. You know, we'll see. I think we had some positive results in the fall. Whether those correlate with to positive results at the IRA, there's a lot that happens between, say, November and March or May. So training's been solid. Just the attitude of the group is just great. The guys are just kind of, it's an easy group. It's a cohesive group to deal with, and to push them to train hard is not a difficult job. So early season races this weekend against Dartmouth. That'll be a good preseason test. You know, Dartmouth had a really good fall season. And they're definitely a strong program with Wyatt Allen as their coach. Wyatt's a great guy, great coach. And then getting into the meat of the season with races against Yale and Brown in San Diego on April 4th and 5th. And then, yeah, the dual season against Washington through the middle of April, leading into the more important races at Pac-12 and IRA. So we'll see. I think we did a really good job last year of building through some difficult results at first and continuing to get better and better, and whatever the results of the first couple races, you know, as long as we're getting better and getting faster through March and April and May, you know, then we'll put ourselves in a pretty good position.
Well, the hope is for smooth waters and great success. We appreciate your time, Scott, for being with us, and good luck over the course of the next couple of months.
Thanks. Go Bears.
All right, Scott Franson, second year coach of the men's crew team. And a reminder, April 25th, they'll host the Huskies at Redwood Shore. Then same location, but technically, I guess, the visiting team was Stanford on May the 2nd. Pac-12s starting May the 17th. And the IRA championships on the other side of the country, Mercer, New Jersey, May 29th through 31. And, of course, an Olympic year as well will be represented. Cal will be in the Olympic Games in Japan. Well, that wraps it up for this week. We appreciate Mark Fox and Scott being with us. And a reminder, we'll be on the air with basketball Thursday night. Bears against the Colorado Buffaloes, 5:30, pregame show, 6 o'clock tip. And on Saturday, Senior Day, it'll be the Bears hosting the Utah Utes as the Bears will honor their seniors on that day. Once again, I'm Todd McKim. We appreciate you listening each and every week. And as always, go Bears!
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.